There were only 11 friends with Jesus, though, not the 12 like there had been. One of the 12 had already proven to be no friend at all. Satan had taken hold of Judas, the betrayer. But 11 remained, yet they kept falling asleep as Jesus prayed. But there was no sleep for Jesus. He prayed. He prayed earnestly. He fell on his face and tasted the dirt as he cried, "Father, if possible, let this cup pass." The father gazed lovingly at his son, and the son stared back knowingly. "Your will be done, Father," whispered the son. And the father held out the cup, and Jesus looked in it. And what he saw flung him into throes of agony. He pressed his forehead down into the dirt, which softened into mud when mingled with his tears. He felt small, several explosions of pain underneath the skin in his face. His tiny capillaries in the sweat glands burst under the stress, and blood flowed through his pores, dropping into his eyes. And it stung. He lifted his head to the sky and cried out, "I will drink this cup, Father. I will drink from the cups that your glory may be vindicated and my name may be glorified, and so that the sheep that you have given me will see our glory and enjoy it forever. I will drink on behalf of our rescue mission." Just then, through blurry eyes, Jesus saw the line of torches slithering like a snake up the hill to the garden. The mob had arrived. Judas kissed. Friends fled. Soldiers arrested. And Jesus' world became a swirl of torment and mockery. His trial was a sham. Liars lied and mockers mocked. God claimed to be God, and it was called blasphemy. The face that Moses longed to see, the face that was too holy for him to see, that face was slapped and spit on. More blood in the eyes. More stinging. The governor of Judea was up early this cold, gray, wet morning. The priests and soldiers led Jesus to the palace of Pontius Pilate, and they leveled their charges. "This man forbids us to pay tribute to Caesar, and he calls himself a king." Pilate stared intently at Jesus. He questioned Jesus and found no guilt. Neither did King Herod. So Pilate offered to release Jesus. But there was a swelling crowd gathered outside in the courtyard. And when he asked them, "What shall I do with Jesus of Nazareth?" they answered with one voice, "Crucify him, crucify him." And their voices prevailed. Pilate washed his hands and delivered the innocent one to death. Jesus was stripped and his hands were tied above his head to a post. A large, shirtless Roman legionnaire stepped forward holding a whip. Several heavy leather thongs hung at the end, weighed down by small beads of lead and bits of bone attached near the ends of each, and the muscles on his back and arms bulged as he brought it down upon Jesus' back and shoulders and legs again and again and again. The Jews had a law that you could only be whipped 39 times, but the Romans knew no such mercy. And so Jesus is whipped until he no longer looks like he's even a man anymore. Fearing that they had gone too far, they cut him loose and force him to stand. He is not yet dead. He is still alive. A purple robe, not his own, is put on him, clinging to his open wounds. They make him hold a stick, a mock scepter. And now the king of the Jews needed a crown. And so one of the Romans picked up a thorn branch from a pile of firewood and braided it into a circle. Never did thorns compose so rich a crown or so painful a crown. Jesus is led beyond the city gates. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, Friday. There's a hill waiting for him. It's called Golgotha, the skull. As they reach the top of the hill, the centurions hand Jesus a cup. Jesus sniffs the liquid. It's wine mixed with myrrh, a mild narcotic to dull the pain. But Jesus is meant to feel all this pain. So he hands the cup back. This is not the cup of the Father. Jesus is placed on the crossbeam. Two men take hold of his hands. They pick up the cold spikes and place them on each of Jesus' wrists. In that moment, Jesus hears his own words of power, the word of power that holds these centurions who are holding him down in existence, the words of power that causes these hammers to be. He's speaking it all into being. The soldiers, the priests, the thieves, the friends, the mob, the wooden beams, the spikes, the thorns, the ground beneath him, and the dark clouds gathering above. If he ceases to speak, they will all cease to be, and this will all be over. But he wills that they remain. And so the soldiers live on, and the hammers come crashing down. Jesus is lifted on his crossbeam to the post. He's hanging now by his arms. His pectoral muscles are paralyzed and his intercostals are useless. He can inhale, but he cannot exhale. His compressed heart is struggling to pump blood to his torn tissue. He fights to raise himself in order to breathe and in order to speak. He looks down and the soldiers are now gambling for his clothes. He pushes himself up through the violent pain so that he can pray aloud, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do." And then he sags back into silence. But the crowd is not silence. A group of mockers had gathered around the foot of his cross, and they taunt him, saying, "He saved others, let him save himself. If you're the Christ, come down from the cross. Save yourself, King of the Jews." The criminal on the cross to his left joins in the mockery. But the thief to the right repents. And so Jesus again pushes himself up so that he can say to this man, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." It's noon now. The rain falls harder and the clouds blacken. Jesus looks down through wet strands of hair into the familiar face of a woman, and a new pain grips him. A greater pain than all the whips and spikes in the kingdom of Rome. He's looking at his mother. And she's sobbing so hard that her breath is as labored as his. Without words, she looks into his eyes and begs to know why. He longs to hold her and tell her that this is all for her. He pushes upward and says, "Woman." But that's all he's able to say. And then he sees his friend John. John is standing behind her, supporting his own weeping mother. And Jesus says, "He is now your son." And then to John, he says, "She is now your mother. Take her away from here." As he sags back into silence, back into countless hours of limitless, eternal pain, he looks up to his father, and his father looks back. But Jesus does not recognize these eyes. These are not the eyes of his loving Father who has known him from all eternity. These are the eyes that pierce the invisible world with fire and darken the visible sky. These are the eyes that are too pure to even look upon sin. And on the cross, Jesus has become sin. And so into these eyes, he hears the Father speaking, not words of comfort, but words of condemnation. Son of man, why have you sinned against me and heaped scorn on my great glory? You are self-sufficient and self-righteous, consumed with yourself and puffed up and selfishly ambitious. You rob me of my glory and worship what's inside of you instead of looking to the one who created you. You are greedy, lazy, slanderer, gossip. You are lying, conceited, ungrateful, cruel, adulterer. You practice sexual immorality. You make pornography and fill your mind with vulgarity. You hate your brother and murder him with the bullets of anger fired from your own heart. You oppress the poor and deal in slaves and ignore the needy. You love prestige and money and honor. You put on an outward cloak of piety, but inside you, you are filled with the dead men's bones, for you are a hypocrite. You are lukewarm and easily enticed by the world. You are filled with envy and rage and bitterness and unforgiveness. You blame others for your sin and are too proud to even call it sin. You are never slow to speak, and you have a razor tongue that lashes and cuts with its criticism and sinful judgment. Your words do not impart grace. Instead, your mouth is a fountain of condemnation and guilt and obscene talk. You are a false prophet leading people astray. You mock your parents. You have no self-control. You are a betrayer who stirs up divisions and factions. You do not trust me. You blaspheme against me. You break up families and crush the parable of my love for the church. The list of your sin goes on, and I hate these things inside of you. And now you must drink the cup of my judgment. And Jesus does. He drinks for hours. He downs every drop of the scalding liquid of God's own hatred of sin, mingled with his own white-hot wrath against that sin. This is the Father's cup. Omnipotent hatred and anger for the sins of every generation, past, present, and future. Omnipotent wrath directed at one naked man hanging on a cross. The Father can no longer even look at his beloved Son. He turns his back. And so Jesus pushes himself upward and howls to the heavens, my God, why have you forsaken me? But there is silence. There is separation. There is no answer. And so Jesus sags and whispers, I thirst. A centurion soaks a sponge in sour wine and lifts it on a reed to Jesus' lips. Sour wine is the sweetest drink he ever tasted. He pushes himself up again and says, it is finished. And it is. Every sin of every child of God has been laid on Jesus, and he drank the cup of God's wrath dry. It's 3:00 Friday afternoon. And Jesus finds one more surge of strength. He presses his torn feet against the spikes, straightens his legs, and with one last gasp of air cries out, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And Jesus dies. And in that moment, the mountains shake, and the rocks split, and the veil is torn. And the tombs are opened. mission accomplished, sacrifice accepted.